Bono. Bono has announced that during the upcoming U2 tour, he's going to wave a giant EU flag on stage. Well, U2 is kicking off its tour in Berlin this week, and we've just had one of our more provocative ideas. During the show, we're going to wave a big, bright, blue EU flag. According to Bono, waving a giant EU flag is transgressive. It's a radical act. Waving a flag that represents a giant unelected bureaucracy. So radical. Waving a flag that represents the interests of a Byzantine metropolitan elite who have repeatedly ignored the democratic will of European citizens. So transgressive. Waving a flag that represents draconian self-serving neoliberal economic policies that have ruined the lives of working class people in Greece, Italy and Spain. So radical. Waving a flag that represents a federal superstate whose entire agenda is based around removing sovereignty and control from ordinary people. So transgressive! One of the richest celebrities on the planet waving a flag that represents one of the most opaque, autocratic institutions on the planet. So radical! Mate, remember when Geldof stuck his middle finger up at those working-class fishermen?
Yeah.
In comparison, you make him look like a man of the people. Bono says he's proud to recall when Germany welcomed frightened Syrian refugees. Remember, this was the same guy who back in 2015 lectured us all not to use the word migrants. We must call them refugees. Then what happened? Waves and waves of migrants, not refugees, flooded into Germany. It was 2,000 migrants who molested over 1,000 women in Cologne on New Year's Eve in 2015. It was a migrant who barreled a truck through a Berlin Christmas market in December 2016, killing 12 people and injuring 56 others. Germany's violent crime rate increased, and 90% of it was attributable to male migrants.
Yeah,
hope you're proud, Bono. Really proud. Hey, Bono, if you're so proud, why didn't you take in any refugees? I mean, you're worth $700 million, and you own 3 multi-million dollar properties. But don't expect him to take in any refugees, since he doesn't even like having neighbours. Not content with living in a single mansion in 2005, Bono bought the one next door. Still no room for those frightened Syrian refugees, though. Oh, but he temporarily changed the chorus of a U2 song to raise awareness. So I guess that's something,
right?
Bono says only dirty right-wing nationalists think that diversity is a danger because Bono loves diversity. He loves diversity so much, he spends most of his time living in an affluent suburb of Dublin that's almost entirely white. So diverse. In a town which is full of mega-rich celebrities like himself. So diverse. What's the difference between God and Bono? God doesn't walk around Dublin believing he's Bono. That was a joke.
That really saddens me.
Bono says he's proud of Europe's fight to end climate change. A fight that Bono does his best to contribute towards by travelling around Europe in his luxury private Learjet and lazing around in his CO2-belching 140-foot yacht. U2's private jet carbon footprint for its 2009 tour was also big enough to fly the band to Mars and back. Bono also paid for 2 long-distance taxi rides and a flight to pick up a hat that he'd forgotten. So proud of you, Bono. Bono says he's also proud of the fight to end global poverty. So proud that his charity called out giant corporations who use shell companies and offshore tax havens to siphon much-needed funds out of developing countries. But not proud enough for Bono himself to refrain from buying into a partnership of one of those very shell companies. Bono's so proud of the fight to end global poverty that his charity, which was set up to help fight global poverty, gives so much money to help fight global poverty. No, no, that's right, it gives just 1% of its income to fight global poverty. According to Bono, Europeans living under the EU are happier than ever. So happy that according to a recent poll, Europeans living in France, Germany and Spain, the countries most closely embroiled with the EU, are overwhelmingly pessimistic about their children's future. In France, for example, just 9% thought that their children would be better off than them in the future. So happy! Meanwhile, Bono says he's inspired by Pope Francis's solidarity with the most vulnerable. Unless, of course, you're talking about vulnerable children being sexually abused by Catholic priests.
Welcome to the War Room. Today is August 30th of 2018. We are almost 2 years into the Trump presidency. The war, and it is a war. I don't say war to be sensational or to try and gin up a sense of any kind of emotions. It's just it's very accurate to say that there's a war going on throughout the world, in our own government, in the minds of American citizens, European citizens. There's a war, and the war is primarily based in these locations, whether it's Europe or it's America. That's the epicenter of the war, whether it's the Civil War or it's the war waged by the Chinese communists, other nations that would like to subvert our interests. And then there's a war going on, of course, for the African nations and for these Asian nations and all these different places where there are resources, but the people aren't exactly in a place to, well, they're not exactly world players. And of course, I mean, it can really get people down to just see what's going on. You see the constant sustained attacks against President Trump, against InfoWars, against Breitbart, the Daily Caller, anybody who stands out as a voice that just opposes us, whether they're libertarians, conservatives, even liberals. Now, I don't think, you know, there's a big thing going on where it's like, well, I'm a liberal and I just don't like this. I still think that liberalism is not the right way forward, but I respect the fact that certain liberals are able to step out and say, this is too far. And it's created kind of, you know, strange bedfellows in the fact that, you know, there's people like Dave Rubin. That guy is clearly a more liberal type person. We probably disagree on a lot of different stuff, but he's become a very, very large figure in this alternative media sphere, this this new community that's been created. And even though we probably disagree on everything, we are both fighting for the same thing. You have to look at all the different people in order to just to not get bogged down in all of the negativity that you see in the news cycle all day long. You have to look at the different people that are fighting alongside you and doing great things. I mean, you know, just to think of a few different people, of course, there's InfoWars, there's the Daily Caller, there's Breitbart, there's Lauren Southern and these alternative media people. And then there's Instagram accounts and there's artists that go out there like Sabo is one of them. Sabo is doing some excellent, great work. And that's just a great example of how you can go out there and that you can also make a difference. So that's just a little thought. That's something that I have to remind myself often in order to not get too depressed when I'm looking at the news, because it's very, very depressing. Now, we're going to get into some the first story that I'm going to cover today. We've got a lot of stuff going on. There's lots of crazy stuff in the news. We've got Beto O'Rourke, who is running against Senator Ted Cruz, trying to unseat him and become one out of two senators of Texas. We don't want to see that happen. You know, there's a lot of talk about, oh, he's the new Obama. And that is probably true, because Obama, you know, they're both tall, lanky characters without much substance on the inside. I don't even find either of them very charismatic. A lot of people say, oh man, I can't stand Obama, but he's got some great speaking skills. I never got the whole Obama is a great speaker thing. He never really captivated me that much. But anyway, so we're going to be talking about him a little bit. One of the big things that they always push is Beto doesn't take PAC money. I don't think these people actually know what PACs are. It's just political action campaigns. And political action campaigns often don't give money to the candidates. They collect money from people and then they spend that money and go out and put, create advertisements in favor of that candidate. They don't give the money directly to the campaign. I think that's something that a lot of people need to note. But they say, oh, he doesn't take large campaign contributions. Well, we're going to debunk that here in a minute. Well, later on in the show, actually. Harrison Smith is going to be on with me in the third hour. We're going to be talking about some very crazy stuff that's been going on. We'll get into that later. I don't even have the time to explain it right now. We're going to be talking about some weird suppression of American history and American holidays, globalist war, Macron in France, and then Italy's Salvini, pro-migrant, anti-migrant, lots of different stuff there, pro-EU, anti-EU. The first, I want to start it off with a light story today. This is probably my favorite story on the Drudge Report today, and it's because it doesn't have anything to do with the news. It doesn't have anything to do with Trump. Doesn't have anything to do with globalism or nationalism or any of these things. It's something that we can all agree on. We can all laugh at. We've been able to laugh at it forever. The Maine Department of Transportation denies a request from PETA to put up a memorial for lobsters killed in a crash. And that's a mock-up right there of this, of the potential stone that could be erected to the, in memory of the lobsters who suffered and died on this spot, August 2018. Now, PETA, this is the subline, PETA wants to build a 5-foot tombstone, 5 feet tall, a 5 feet tombstone for lobsters. People don't get 5 foot tall tombstones, but I want to read you what it says about, so they basically, there was a truck crash that turned over and a bunch of lobsters were in there and they fell out and they probably, a lot of them died. And this is PETA's statement. This is why they requested it. Countless sensitive crustaceans, folks, experienced an agonizing death when this truck rolled over and their bodies came crashing down onto the highway, said PETA Executive Vice President Tracy Ryman. Tracy Ryman, yeah. PETA hopes to pay tribute to these individuals. The lobsters are referred to as individuals. These individuals who did not want to die. The lobsters were just thinking, please, not now, God. I don't want to die. Please, please just get me back. Take me back to the ocean where I belong. This isn't how it's supposed to go. I have a wife. I have children. These individuals who didn't want to die, with a memorial urging people to help prevent future suffering by keeping lobsters and all other animals off of their plates. If you don't like lobsters dying in violent truck crashes, agonizing death. If you don't like lobsters experiencing agonizing death, just stop eating animals. Okay, folks, that's how you can prevent things like this. Now, not even to mention that the way that you cook lobsters is you boil water and then you just throw them in. That's not the agonizing death that lobsters are worried about. Lobsters are worried about being thrown, ejected from a vehicle and crashing down onto the hot asphalt. Anyway, so the Maine Department of Transportation says they denied the request Thursday because, come on. No, that's not what they said. They basically said that this is a controlled access highway, which means that we prohibit signs. And in this case, a tombstone because of safety concerns. Basically, the Maine government is concerned that people will, like if they veer off the road for whatever reason, then, you know, that would be one thing, but they don't want people veering off the road in an accident and then crashing into a 5-foot stone, erected in honor of some lobsters because, you know, people see, this is the thing that PETA doesn't understand is that most people care more about other people than they do lobsters. It's great to pay respect to these lobsters that die. These lobsters died for your freedoms, folks, and you can't even respect them by not eating meat. Come on. So anyways, they care more about people. They don't want people being put in danger. And there's a whole email like response. It's hilarious because it's like a very official. The way I printed this out, it doesn't show it very well. But anyways, the email is basically just like, well, we thank you for your inquiry, but unfortunately, we don't put any signs or monuments up on this highway due to safety concerns. So PETA responded and they said, okay, well, we're going to try and get a monument as close as possible. So they might like get it off the highway on some road that has nothing to do with this tragic event. And they're going to erect a monument there in honor of this tragic, tragic event. Let's take a moment of silence for these very, very sad lobsters that died too soon. Okay, that's good. Here's another little interesting story. This one is a little bit less funny, and it's less funny and it's more infuriating, I would say. There's a movie that came out recently. It's about Neil Armstrong. It's about the first moon landing, the first man to be on moon. It's called First Man. Neil Armstrong is played by Ryan Gosling, I believe. He's a Canadian actor. You probably have seen him in, I don't remember which movies he's in, but you've probably seen him in the movies. You definitely recognize his face. And so Canadian First Man actor defends omitting American flag planting on moon. Wait, what? So Ryan Gosling, I'm going to talk about this briefly back on the other side of this break, but they omitted the planting of the American flag on the moon. And I'll get into the reasons why on the other side. But during this break, please take a moment to go to the InfoWarsStore.com. We have a lot of different specials coming out. New products, Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off, Ultimate Female Force, and we'll be back with more on the other side from the War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back to the War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd, your host for the rest of today's show, filling in for Owen Schroyer. He did the Alex Jones show earlier today, so I'm filling in for him. And we've got a really good show. In the third hour, I mentioned that Harrison Smith is going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about some really, really interesting stuff. But we're also going to be having a guest on, a very special guest. He's a student at UT. He runs his own website. It's a libertarian outlet. We'll be talking about that more later, but we have a really, really special, very exciting new project that we'll be launching here at Infowars.com because they've banned us on YouTube. They've banned us in so many places here on the internet. Luckily, we still have our own website, and we have dedicated fans, listeners, and viewers that know to go to Infowars.com if you can't find us somewhere else. But, you know, who knows? Like, there have been examples of other media outlets that have been banned. Like, their internet service providers or their domain registrars have banned them. They've said, hey, you got to get off of here. You got 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever to get off of here and find a new domain registrar. And that's a serious problem. Now, I don't agree with all those people. Like, they're actually, you know, they call us Nazis. They call us bad people, racist, white supremacists. That is the stuff that this is those are the people that this stuff is happening to. People like Richard Spencer, the Daily Stormer. Now, I totally disagree with pretty much everything that they say. But in America, where we do have the First Amendment, we need to defend people's right to say crazy junk, to say crazy stuff, because it's a chilling effect. It's a desensitization where they go for the crazy people, and then there's a new crazy, and then they go for those people, and they're completely off the internet, and then there's a new crazy, and then they keep going and keep going and keep going until they get to reasonable people like you and me, and all of a sudden, we are the new crazy ones. Now, they've been painting us as crazy since Alex Jones started this business 20, 25 years ago, but it's slowly getting to where we are closer and closer to the edge of what is acceptable, and eventually it will be where nobody but the most centrist, boring, milquetoast losers are able to talk. Everybody else will have been kicked off of the internet totally, not just off YouTube, not just off Facebook. And this is where the libertarian argument of, oh, you know, private companies can do whatever they want, as long as it's not the government. That's where this breaks down, because eventually it does get down to us, and it does get down to our website getting taken off of the internet. And that's why it's so important that we are launching this new project, and we're going to be getting into it later on. And as you know, the place that you can find our streams is Infowars.com/show. If you can't find us on, right now we're also on Reel.video. We're on BitChute, a lot of different outlets. But this is the place where you can always find us regardless of what company decides to kick us off next. Now, we can trust companies like BitChute and Reel.video, Reel.video being owned by Mike Adams himself. So we can trust places like that. But others, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, we can't be so reliant upon them. You can always find us at Infowars.com/show. But because we've been kicked off so many other places, we will be launching a thing where we will be doing and directing stuff in the real world. And so that's something interesting there. But I want to get back to this article that we were talking about before the break. The article is Canadian First Man actor, that's the title, First Man, defends omitting the American flag planting on the moon because the achievement, quote, transcended countries and borders. Now, again, the movie covers the late Neil Armstrong's 1969 trip to the moon. And they say it may have been one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, but it was also achievement for the United States. And that is true. However, Ryan Gosling, the actor who plays Neil Armstrong, he says the magic moment was intentionally omitted from the big screen because Armstrong's achievement transcended countries and borders. And he says, I think this was widely regarded in the end as a human achievement, and that's how we chose to view it. Now, of course, if you're listening to this, it probably sounds absurd. The moon landing, the space race, was not about humankind reaching the stars. Now, that's a good goal. That's something that maybe we should all support. But it was a race between Russia and America. It was igniting something in the American spirit, something to fight for, something, a goal and a future to look forward to, where America was on the moon. And we beat the Russians there. We beat everybody else there. But now this movie is robbing us of that. And of course, you know, it includes a quote from Neil Armstrong at the bottom. My job was to get the flag there. I was less concerned about whether that was the right artifact to place, Armstrong said. but I let other wiser minds than mine make those decisions. And it talks about how, because President Obama said, among the greatest American heroes, referring to Neil Armstrong, not just of his time, but of all time. And he discussed the deliberate decision to go with the American flag over the United Nations flag before he passed. So this is Neil Armstrong, because there was apparently a controversy. Should we put the U.S. flag on the moon, or should we put the United Nations? In the end, it was decided by Congress that this was the United States project. We were not going to make any territorial claim, but we were to let people know that we were here and we put a U.S. flag up. And that's the thing. It doesn't matter how Neil Armstrong saw this action. It doesn't matter how other people saw this action. It's a point of historical fact that the United States landed on the moon first, and we planted an American flag there. This is not something. Does it transcend borders and countries? Yes. Is it an accomplishment that everybody should be proud of? Actually, no. Other people don't get to be proud of this. They might think, wow, it's so cool that the Americans got to the moon. But we are the ones that get to be proud of this. America is the country that did it, the country that possessed the technology, the ingenuity, and the drive to put a man on the moon. This is something that Americans get to be proud of. The rest of mankind can be excited. They can be glad that they did it. They can be glad that the United States of America was able to do this. And that's how it should be viewed. Everybody should say, man, I'm sure glad that those Americans were able to do this. I'm glad that the Americans exist. I'm glad that the United States of America exists and it is the world hegemonic power, because otherwise it wouldn't have happened. And it's true. Without America, that and other things like it would not have happened. This is ours to be proud of. Okay? And this is the type of stuff that you get out of Hollywood. You get movies that take great moments in American history, great men in American history, and they make them something they're not. They say, this isn't a victory for America. This is a victory for the world. And you can bet that if they could have gotten away with it, I'm sure that the directors would have much rather had Neil Armstrong planting a flag for the United Nations. And why? The United Nations had nothing to do with this. But that's the mindset they have. It's the same way. And this is just a little example of the propaganda machine that is Hollywood. And it's only one example. I say that because you look at movies like, and this is a very timely example, you look at movies like Invictus. It's a movie about Nelson Mandela. They paint him, and this is where most people get their information about Nelson Mandela in the United States. Maybe they hear a little bit about him in school. They hear some good things. They hear some positive things. But then in this movie, Invictus, with Nelson Mandela, you have him. He's a good guy. He goes to jail for no reason. He's a political captive. And then he comes back and he makes South Africa amazing. The man was a terrorist. The man made South Africa, quote, great and diverse by car bombs, IEDs, and other acts of terrorism. And now you have this situation where South Africans, white farming South Africans, are being killed just for their skin color. This is The War Room. We'll be right back with more on the other side. My name is Jake Lloyd.
Infowars.com/show. Warning, this broadcast contains subject matter
that might trigger
liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer.
It's The War Room with Jake Lloyd, filling in for Owen Schroyer today on August 30th of 2018. And we're rolling right along through the first half of the first hour. We've got a lot of good stuff coming for you today. And we, in the last segment, we talked about the omission of the American flag being planted on the moon in this new movie, First Man, where Neil Armstrong is portrayed by Ryan Gosling, and how that is an attempt to subvert and change American history. Because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of historical movies, you know, Apollo 13, a lot of different movies that get played for students. I know that I've seen a lot of those movies back when I was in middle school, high school. A lot of times if there's just an open spot, or if maybe a teacher's lazy, or maybe the teacher's not lazy and there's just some kind of historical value, then a lot of times they'll play these movies. And so maybe, I mean, First Man may be one of those movies that get, because apparently it did really well at the box office. So it might be one of these movies that gets played for high school students, middle school, even elementary school age students. in order for them to see the story about the first landing. But in this movie, the children will not see the American flag being planted on the moon, which is one of the first or one of the most important aspects of this whole of the story of the event. There's other things like Neil Armstrong's statement, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. As they were as they could see the Earth outside of the window of the of their little spaceship, whatever it would be called. They read the first, the opening portion of Genesis from the Bible. There's a lot of very, very important little events in this greater event. But the American flag being planted on the moon is arguably one of the most important. And they've omitted it because they say that it transcended countries and borders. But in reality, what they want to do is erase the notion of countries and borders. And we have another story relating to that now. Like, I mean, this is everything right now, folks. Everything. Everything is about, because it's the biggest step that they have to take before they can get into the next phase of their global one world government program, is erasing countries and borders. They were able to create the UN. They were able to prop up China using the banks and those people so that they could challenge U.S. Hegemony throughout the world. And now they realize that they can't, you know, they've done it with the EU. They realize that they cannot get to the next step unless they take down America, because America is the last bastion of national sovereignty. They can do it in the EU, but as long as America stands, they're going to have revivals. Like you see it with Brexit. Of course, Brexit is kind of being hijacked and slowed down and kind of nerfed. But Brexit was a stand for national sovereignty in favor of the United Kingdom. We see it in Poland. We see it in Hungary with Viktor Orban. We see it in Italy with their new leader, Salvini. So as long as there is one little ray of light of nationalism and national sovereignty in the world, which is America, these other countries will still have hope. But if America was to go down and America becomes a total globalist hellhole like Obama wanted it to be, basically, Brussels is the head of the EU, and basically every country is subject to Brussels of all places. Obama basically and his globalist puppeteers wanted America to be the leader of the UN. But of course, not leader as in we have control of everything, but we have control of everything now. So we'd be giving that power over to the UN. We'd be dispersing it throughout these other countries in the UN, this ultranational government, supranational, I should say, extranational. And of course, that didn't work because the plan was not completely executed. They needed Hillary or one more globalist president in order to solidify everything, but they didn't get that. They got a backlash in the election of Donald Trump. And so they need to completely erase, in order to take down America so that they can get their globalist plan enacted everywhere else, they have to erase the entire notion of countries and border, which of course means erasing the countries and borders themselves. This is why you have such a massive push for illegal immigration and immigration as a whole. Of course, they talk about it and they say the reason they want to bring in immigrants, and especially illegal immigrants, is because they vote Democrat and they vote for socialist policies. They vote for bigger government. Of course, that's true, but that's not the bigger picture. The bigger picture is destroying national sovereignty within the United States of America so that they can do it everywhere else permanently. It's been done to the UK, but the UK is trying to break free of it. It's been done to Italy, but Italy's trying to break free of it. It's been done to Poland, Hungary, some other country, France, if Marine Le Pen gets elected. It's been done to them, but not permanently. If they can do it to America permanently, then everywhere else has no hope. And it's, you know, there's a saying that was going around through the Cold War, and of course it was in a different context and meant something different. But, you know, you talk about these other countries, once everybody's backed into America, you have nowhere else to go. So everything stands or falls on the success of the United States. If America falls, we have nowhere else to go that protects our rights the way that the American Constitution does. And that's why it's so important that we fight for America, but we're fighting for something greater than just America. It's not just about saving ourselves. It's kind of like when you're in an airplane and you're flying along, and then they give you the little safety brief and it says, if these bags, the oxygen masks, drop from the top of the plane, put yours on first and then you can help other people around you. then you can put the mask on your child. And that's how we need to look at this. Yes, we're saving America for our own sake because it's our country and we need our country, but it's also so that we can help the rest of the world break free. And it's not even like we're going to go in and build democracies places. It's not like that. It's just we need America to be free as this beacon of national sovereignty so that other places will still have hope and they will still have somebody to cooperate with them. And this is what Donald Trump is doing when you see him leveraging the power of the United States, whether it's the economy or the military. You see him leveraging that power to help other places, to help our interests abroad. What are our interests abroad? For other places to operate independently of global world government. Because if everything is governed by a one world government, then it's literally the entire world against the United States. Now, I've seen math done where the United States could actually sustain an invasion from the rest of the world's great powers because of our great military. If we pulled everybody home and if we fortified our borders and everything because of our really miraculous position in the world, bordered on two sides by coasts and then on the north by Canada, Mexico, to the south, we could sustain that. But the fact is, for this ideological war to be won, America has to be the hegemony. And that is what Donald Trump is doing by leveraging things like the economy, telling China, like, no, we're not playing your game. You're not going to manipulate your currency. You're not going to take advantage of us anymore. Telling the EU that they're not going to take advantage of us anymore, whether it be with NATO. He points out that Germany pays, I think they pay 1% of their GDP towards their military. I think the agreement, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the agreement is either 2 or 3%. Regardless of what it is, Germany does not pay what they have agreed to pay, whereas the United States pays 4.5% of our GDP towards the military. And then we just say, hey, Germany, you're taking advantage of us in trade. We're not going to do that anymore. Of course, everybody loses their minds. We're just leveraging our power and our authority in order to make a fair deal. And that, of course, is for us. That's for American workers. That's for the functioning of the American government. You know, free trade works within a country, but not globally, because then people like China and Germany take advantage of you. But in the end, while it does help us, okay, so it's 2%. Germany pays 2% of their GDP. And I believe the agreement, okay, so the agreement is 2%. I'm getting confused with my numbers here. The U.S. and its allies have all agreed to spend 2% of their GDP on defense by 2024. And a lot of these things are due to Trump using his leverage, but that's what we have to do. We have to save ourselves so that other freedom-loving, liberty-minded countries and individuals throughout the world have hope for their nations as well. And that is the war between globalism and nationalism that we're seeing on the world stage. On the other side, I'm going to get into France and Italy are butting heads. Globalism and nationalism are butting heads between these two countries within the EU. This is The War Room. Stay with us.
Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back. We're closing up the first hour of today's edition of The War Room. At the 4 o'clock hour, Roger Stone will be joining me, and we'll be talking about a lot of things there. Lots of stuff in the news about Roger Stone lately. It's all beginning to circle around that last little inner circle, and they want to go after these people who, you know, did not collude with Russia, did not commit any crimes, but they're associated with Trump. They love America. They love liberty. So, of course, they have to be taken down. They have to be made an example of. Roger Stone is at the forefront of that group of the people that need to be taken down, along with Alex Jones and InfoWars and all these other liberty-loving voices. And folks, there is a way that you can help us in this, and a way that you can, because the lawsuits, the false, erroneous lawsuits are still coming at us, where they file a frivolous lawsuit just to hit us financially. And we need to be able to pay for these. We need to be able to expand. I mentioned I've been teasing out a little project that we're going to be launching here at InfoWars pretty soon. And we need your support. We don't just plug because, like, this is not just the way that we pay the bills. It is, but it's we actually need it because we have been kicked off these other platforms. Our voice has been stunted in a way. Of course, you know, it kind of backfired on them because only more eyes began to look at what we were saying and doing. But the fact is that we have been kicked off these platforms and we need your support. And one of those ways you can support us is watching this at Infowars.com/show. But the way that you can financially support us and make sure that all of this is possible is going to InfowarsStore.com. Right now we have some great new products and deals happening right now. Right now, Ultimate Bone Broth is being launched for 50% off right now. It's our all new Ultimate Bone Broth formula. And we have a deal right now, 50% off. You can get it temporarily. Who knows how long these deals will last? We cannot keep them going forever, but take advantage of the upgraded version of a fan favorite formula. Now, people loved bone broth the first couple go-rounds we had with it, and we made a few changes to the formula, made it better. Now it's Ultimate Bone Broth, and it is launching right now. That's the chocolate flavor that you have right there. They put together a little ad showing the different ways that you can use this. You know, you can just mix it with water. You can mix it with protein and milk. There's a lot of different ways. But when they were filming this ad, they showed different ways you can make like smoothies out of it. And it was actually really, really good. The one that I had, it was like bone broth and banana and like honey or something else like that. It was really, really good. So there's a lot of different ways that you can use this product. Right there, we have 25% off Super Silver Wound Gel. It's just a colloidal silver gel that you can put on wounds. You can put it on wound dressings, band-aids, whatever, and it'll help disinfect the wound and keep it from getting infected. So you can defend against bacteria and infection today with the only FDA-certified wound treatment product of its kind, Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel from InfoWars Life. And right now it looks like it is $29.95. Yep, $29.95. For a temporary time, that's $10 savings of 25%. 93% of the people that have bought it recommend it. 4.7 star rating. And you can set it for auto ship. And if it's on auto ship, we will never sell out for you. Even if we sell out the product, we know that we need enough for the people who have signed up for auto ship. So you never have to worry about us running out and you not getting your supply of Super Silver or bone broth or whatever else you have. And of course, as a War Room exclusive, you can use the code War Room to save $5 off of the InfoWars Hexagon logo t-shirt in the store. You can see it. Owen on the show has been wearing this t-shirt. There it is, the InfoWars Hexagon logo t-shirt. It's one of the coolest designs that I think that we have come up with. And the coupon code is War Room, no spaces, just WARROOM. And you can see that design. I mean, it's a really cool design. We've got it all over the studio here behind me and everything. But just, you know, pushing the shirt, but it's also just a really cool design. So this is that's the coupon code for how you can get $5 off of that shirt. It's already $20 right now, $19.95. You can get, I believe, an extra $5 off of that price. So it's a really good deal. And I urge all of you to go and check out all of these products, these deals, and more at InfoWarsStore.com. That is how you can financially support us in the face of these lawsuits, the censorship, and all of the rest, and fund our expansion and our fight against the globalist machine that wants to they would like to kill us, honestly, I think. You know, I don't think I'm remiss in saying that. I think they would like to just completely erase us from the map so that you would not have any voices giving you an alternate perspective. And speaking of that globalist machine, you have Emmanuel Macron. Now, this guy's a really weird character. He comes on the scene. He defeated Marine Le Pen in the French elections, I believe just after Donald Trump was elected. And he seemed like a liberal guy. He was a Rothschild banker, so that's not a good sign either. And then he has some weird things where he says, like, you know, liberals, you typically think of them wanting to be big government, like no ruler, just a big bureaucracy running it. But then he comes out and says things like he thinks of himself as like some Jupiterian monarch, like the Roman god Jupiter. It's very strange, very bizarre. He has a weird power struggle with Donald Trump. Of course, Donald Trump makes him look very foolish whenever they're around. You know, he pulls lint or dandruff off of his shoulder. And I mean, how do you respond to that when you're in front of the entire world? So Trump handles him well, but we don't exactly know what this guy's deal is, where he stands and everything, but he's making it more and more clear as the day goes on. And you see that that headline that was just up there, Macron tells Denmark there's no such thing as a true Dane or a true Frenchman. And just the, you know, top sentence here, French politicians have reacted with anger after Emmanuel Macron asserted that true Frenchmen and Danes, quote, do not exist, and attacked the people he rules over as a stubbornly resistant to change while on an official visit to Denmark. And this, of course, you know, basically, if you look through this article, he says things like, you know, there's no such thing as Frenchmen. There's no such thing as Danish people or Germans. He basically implies he only talks about Danes or Frenchmen, but there's no such thing as Germans or Italians or Danes or Englishmen. They're all just Europeans. He even says, let's see if I can find it in here. He even says that their language is not Danish or French. Yeah, here, even your language is not just Danish, it's European. The same is true for the French. You'll see France transformed by its people. And he says people are changing their minds. They're much more open to risk. And he's talking about migrants and other things. He talks a lot about them. He's very pro-migrant. France has a deep and complex identity, which has always been thought of as universalism. Where is he getting that from? I've never heard that before. I've never heard of the French identity being universalism. I've always heard of the French having a very, very solid and coherent identity. Like when you think of French, you think of a very, very particular type of person, a very particular lifestyle throughout history. And that's what you think of when you hear French. But no, apparently to him, it's always been universalism. I mentioned Marine Le Pen a minute ago. She commented, in Denmark, Macron castigates the Gaulish stubborn resistance to change. Now, the French people are descendant of the Gauls, which you hear of, you know, if you're looking at antiquity in the Roman times, you hear about the Gallic Wars, the wars against the Romans and the Gallic people, which are now the French people, the Franks. So he castigates the Gaulish stubborn resistance to change. As usual, he despises the French from abroad. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? I distinctly remember an American president that would often go to other countries and then talk trash about his own people back home. That would be Obama. And that's a very, very common trait with these progressive politicians, these liberal politicians, where they go out and they go on an apology tour. They say, oh, you know, we're not so great. It's all about the world, or it's all about Europe, or what have you. And she says the Gauls, quote, will be happy to respond to his arrogance and contempt. I think that's just her saying that they will be happy to challenge him again at every turn and likely in the next election. I would love to see a President Marine Le Pen of France. But there was some other interesting tidbit in here. I'm not sure if it's in this one or the next article that I'm going to talk about with you, but globalist Macron vows to kill nationalism in Europe while Italy's Salvini declares that the EU is filth. Emmanuel Macron has vowed a globalist bloc determined to impose a progressive EU superstate on the continent, which will defeat extremist pro-national sovereignty conservatives at European Parliament elections next year. So he's declared that the world is at a moment of great transformations, but he outlined his vision for a European sovereignty in which Brussels, I mentioned Brussels a little bit earlier in the show, will have an autonomy comparable to that of China or the United States of America, and it must become the model of humanist refoundation of globalization. And of course, Italy's Salvini, he's the one that turned away the migrants. Now, notice Italy doesn't have a migrant problem the way they did before. He called the EU filth, and he said if they want Italy's money, if Italians are going to be paying for the EU's bills, they better show that it's worth it and that they are deserving of it. I agree, the EU is filth. The UN is filth. All of these other attempts at global government and usurpation of national sovereignty is...
The War Room. Infowars.com/show. Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
John McCain actively pushed before he left the Senate with Obama a year and a half ago. I mean, he just left a few months ago to create this whole CIA operation against independent news and to begin deplatforming the American people. I've got articles here today where 96% of Google searches result for Trump, the search Trump, news for liberal media outlets, 96% negative. And now they're learning that the New York Post, the Washington Times, conservative articles from even the Wall Street Journal are being completely shadow banned where you cannot share them on Facebook. They're worse than Twitter. This is racketeering. They deny to Congress they've been doing it. They've got major web services that track it. Members of Congress have discovered they've been totally shadow banned to manipulate this election. It's not the Russian bots. It's the globalist bots of Facebook and of Google and of Apple and all of them. You know, if you look back on the week before I got deplatformed on 26 major platforms, world history, the first thing they did was go in before they even deleted my channel. The day before, we noticed that they deleted more than 10 videos the week before that had gone viral with millions of views total. We're going to re-upload them this week, where I said Apple has moved to communist China. So has Google. They're helping censor there, and they're bringing censorship here with a social credit score to control everything you do and deplatform you from credit cards, from hotels, from travel, from flights, from business, if you don't comply with their social control. They got panicked by that because Congress was already starting hearings. Tim Cook, who admittedly met with the heads of those first four companies to ban me Sunday night, and they made the decision to ban me. That is total collusion. So, I broke this with Paul Watson 5 years ago, the Chinese social score that actually Google and others were building for the Chinese. Now it's Associated Press, Reuters, you name it, reporting it like it's no big deal that they're moving to China and helping censor here. And Facebook announced last Monday they're bringing in the social score to everyone on Facebook. And they go, oh, we're private companies. No, they're 90%+ of all emails, of all videos, of all communications. It's how most people communicate now, and they're censoring it all. And then your smartphones force feed you CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times. But despite that, it's not working. And Oliver Darcy sits there and says, ban Alex Jones, get him off the air. Hundreds of articles everywhere. Big national story. And then on Friday, he puts out a headline. President Trump is propping up the idea that conservatives are censored. It's not true. No one's censored. Because Trump's now looking at it. Congress is looking at it. They're getting ready to have hearings. Zuckerberg's being called back up. And they just hope everybody's ignorant in there about what's happening. But something happened. I've gotten all the documents and all the files to the president and to Congress. I've done things like pay to have them hand-curried by delivery. I've done things like make sure people give it right to the president. And he's going to get more this week. So get ready for the executive orders. I've got top lawyers on Sherman Antitrust Act Section 2. I've got all of it. I mean, you guys are absolutely 100% done if the president moves against you, period.
You heard it right there, folks, from the man himself, Alex Jones, talking about, I mean, look, folks, we are ready to metaphorically go to war in the legal system, whatever it takes, go to war with these people who are lying about us, slandering us, attempting to infringe upon our personal God-given liberties. And all we need is the president to go after these people for antitrust violations, break up these monopolies, and he has signaled that he might be willing to do so. We need President Trump to go after these people because we are ready to go to war with him and for ourselves. We'll be right back with Roger Stone and myself, Jake Lloyd, on the other side. This is The War Room. The War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd. I'm now joined for the rest of this hour by the great Roger Stone. And the first thing that we're going to get into a little bit, you may have seen on Twitter, there's been a kind of a back and forth between the president and Carl Bernstein of CNN. Now, the president called him, I can't remember his little nickname for him, but he basically said that he thinks like a degenerate fool. And this is about an article that came out from CNN. And one of Michael Cohen's lawyers has repeatedly changed his story and his account of what Cohen knew about President Donald Trump's involvement in a controversial meeting with Russians in Trump Tower. Now, I wanted to bring Roger in for this because I am actually not as familiar with the story exactly how Lanny Davis is changing his story that much. I know that he's changed it a couple times, but I really didn't realize how big of a deal this story was, how many falsehoods were in this story until I saw President Trump call Carl Bernstein a degenerate fool. And even then, I've been so into other news stories. So, Roger, what is your take on this? And how are they using this Cohen story to try and bring the president down?
Well, Jake, first of all, it's great to be with you here on the War Room. This is a very big story. Carl Bernstein, formerly of the Washington Post, one of the two reporters who allegedly broke the Watergate story, we can revisit that, reported for CNN that Michael Cohen would tell federal investigators, presumably Robert Mueller, if asked, that the president had advanced knowledge of the meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with a woman Russian lawyer. Now, as I have said here at InfoWars on numerous occasions, there's nothing illegal about that meeting, but there's a lot of things that are suspicious about it, including the fact that we still don't know how this woman lawyer, the Russian woman lawyer, Belishnaya, got into the country, on what kind of visa, who approved that visa, wasn't approved in New York, was evidently approved by the State Department, and why this woman met with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS both before and after the Trump Tower meeting. But more importantly, Carl Bernstein, who is a big foot at CNN, reported that Donald Trump knew about this meeting in advance, and he said that Lanny Davis, who was formerly a high-ranking talking head for the Clintons, now ostensibly Michael Cohen's lawyer, was not the source of this story. Well, Bernstein has now been badly embarrassed when Lanny Davis came forward and said that he was the source of the CNN story and he was mistaken, that it wasn't true. You would think that CNN would retract and correct their story, but they have refused to do so. That has caused an employee uprising at CNN, with Breitbart reporting one CNN employee saying that if this wasn't the great Carl Bernstein, the network would be in full retreat. Now, ironically, Carl Bernstein and his Washington Post reporter, Bob Woodward, are thought to be the gold standard of journalists, when in fact, their entire Watergate narrative is completely flawed. Bernstein's now been caught lying big time in this story. And of course, Woodward has continued over the years to lie about his relationship with White House Chief of Staff Al Haig, lie about the fact that he was in military intelligence, lie about the fact that he was, in fact, a military briefer for General Haig, and therefore they had a relationship, which means that Haig is, of course, the leaker of the existence of the White House tapes, and more importantly, the existence of the 18 and a half minute gap in those tapes, which ultimately becomes a major story that brings Nixon down. So rather than being the gold standard of journalism, Bernstein and Woodward, or Woodward and Bernstein, as they're more commonly known, are the godfathers of fake news. Tyler Nixon, who appears many times here with InfoWars doing legal analysis, and I have prepared a 15,000-word monograph on why Woodward and Bernstein are frauds. And this new antic by Carl Bernstein, who the president has called hashtag sloppy Carl, is one of the centerpieces, but not the centerpiece, of this extraordinary and upcoming expose. CNN, Jake, should just admit they got caught in a lie. And their star reporter, who has failed to make it in any other television network, has got caught in a whopper. Instead, they have doubled down and refused to admit what Lanny Davis has exposed them for.
Well, and that's the thing, Roger. I mean, you're looking at this article here from August 28th. It even says, like, they're not only refusing to retract the story, but they're continuing on by saying, we stand by our story, which had more than one source and are confident in our reporting in it, even after Lanny Davis came out and said, yeah, I was the source and I was wrong. I'm sorry. CNN is still refusing to even say that, hey, we might have gotten something wrong, even if it was just their source. They're still refusing to do that. But and they even note here that while they've made these claims and said that Cohen is willing to do this, Cohen is willing to say that, they say Cohen did not have corroborating evidence to back up his claim, Roger. How are they able to continue with this story, using it to try and tarnish the name of the president when they don't even have evidence, and they admit that they don't even have evidence of these claims they're making?
Well, we also know, because Richard Burr, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, has said that this is in complete variance with what Cohen told the Senate Intelligence Committee under oath when he testified for them. So Lanny Davis seems to be jammed up here, coming and going, sold a false narrative to Carl Bernstein, who went with it as a big breaking news. It's no wonder that CNN's ratings are in the tank. It's no wonder that they are losing viewers. It's no wonder that many Americans consider them to be the epitome of fake news.
And the other thing here is that for more than 3 weeks, Davis did not raise any issues. So he let this go for 3 weeks without raising any issues. And then all of a sudden he wants to come out and say, yeah, I was the source. I'm sorry. I was wrong. And like you said, this contradicts another testimony that Cohen gave. But looking further into the story, one second.
This is a huge story and a major black eye for CNN. It is not a story that's going to go away. It is a story that now tarnishes Bernstein's celebrated career. Although the truth is, I know Carl Bernstein. He first stuck his foot in my door when I lived in a small apartment off of DuPont Circle when I was working for President Richard Nixon's reelection. He's actually not a bad fellow in terms of his congeniality, whereas Woodward is kind of a prig and a stiff. But his legacy of lies going into the Reagan administration and his coverage of Iran-Contra, for example, will all be exposed in this upcoming monograph, Woodward and Bernstein, The Godfathers of Fake News, by Roger Stone and Tyler Nixon. Look for it soon at Amazon.com. It'll also be available at the Infowars.com store. This is a black eye for a news network that is already reeling, in my opinion. You're here on The War Room with Jake Lloyd sitting in for Owen Schroyer and yours truly, Roger Stone. We're going to open up the phone lines at 888-201-2244. I know a lot of InfoWarriors have questions about what's going on. Events are moving so quickly in Washington, with Jeff Sessions very clearly on the skids and a number of members of the U.S. Senate moving unconstitutionally, in my opinion, to try to save him. Let's be very clear. We're also going to get into the decision by the president to terminate his White House counsel, Don McGahn. That's the John Dean of the Trump administration, a quisling who has been giving the president bad legal in political advice for since the beginning of this administration. In the meantime, please go to the Infowars.com store and load up on our terrific supplements, our nutraceuticals, a book, a T-shirt, anything that helps us in the fight for freedom. We rely on the Infowars store. This is our lifeblood. This is what finances not only expansion of InfoWars, but Alex Jones's counterattack on the social media behemoths that seek to wipe us off the face of the earth. We cannot survive without your loyal support. So please, go by the site now. We'll be right back.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back. I'm Roger Stone, here with my colleague Jake Lloyd, and you're on The War Room. We're brought into the segment with the incredible guitar licks of the great Eric Clapton. When I was in college, they had a saying, Clapton is God. Well, as a guitarist, he was very close to that. Jake, as you may know, this past Monday was my birthday, August 27th, the same day, ironically, as Lyndon Baines Johnson, a man I was put on Earth to expose for the murder of President John F. Kennedy. My first book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, became an overnight New York Times bestseller. Many thanks to Alex Jones for helping boost that into the stratosphere. But among the terrific gifts that I got from some info warriors, one particular info warrior in California was this mini copy of the United States Constitution and this magnifying glass with which I can read it. So many thanks to my California-based friend, you know who you are, for this terrific gift. Yes, the firing of Don McGahn is an enormous story. Don McGahn joined the Trump campaign as an election law attorney, came from the firm of Jones Day. He was recommended for that position by the hapless dunce, Corey Lewandowski, who was later himself fired from the Trump campaign. And he has been, while I think solid on the issue of getting conservatives appointed to all levels of the federal court system, very lax in terms of giving the president solid legal and political advice as far as the unconstitutional and outrageous assault from Robert Mueller, who really, in truth, has no oversight. You see, the courts have ruled that Mueller's appointment is legal because he theoretically has the oversight of two officials, one elected, one appointed by an elected official. Those, of course, would be President Donald Trump and, in this case, Acting Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. The flaw in that legal thinking, of course, is that both Trump and Rosenstein are at a minimum witnesses and perhaps more at the center of Mr. Mueller's investigation, and therefore they are deeply conflicted. This is a case that no one has brought in the federal courts, not Paul Manafort, not Concord, the so-called Russian media company, and not my former associate and longtime friend, Andrew Miller. The truth is that I think Don McGahn has been an impediment to the discharge of Mr. Sessions, an impediment to the discharge of Mr. Rosenstein, and an impediment to the president moving to a war footing. Now, outrageously, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, Senator Charles Grassley, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, a good man, says on Twitter that he hopes the president's decision to fire McGahn is incorrect. In all honesty, the opinion of the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman violates the separation of powers agreement. The president has the right to choose the men and women who serve him on the White House staff. This is not subject to U.S. Senate approval or confirmation. President Trump doesn't tell Senator Grassley who he can hire on his Senate staff, doesn't tell Senator Grassley who he can hire on the Senate majority staff of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It is wholly inappropriate for Chuck Grassley, a good man, a solid constitutionalist, to tell the president who he can and cannot hire. This should not be confused with the question of Senate confirmation in the wake of a vacancy in the office of the Attorney General. Clearly, Jeff Sessions is an insubordinate hillbilly who is undermining the president's position in favor of states' rights when it comes to the legalization of cannabis. A stunning story at BuzzFeed, which I'm still trying to confirm because it is, after all, BuzzFeed, that says that there is a White House working group that is put together to crack down on the state legalization of medicinal marijuana. Again, we don't know that that's true, but it would be at variance with the president's position as stated in the campaign and the president's position as he has concurred with Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado in terms of legislation that would protect the access of millions of Americans who use cannabis as medicine. we're going to be following that story very closely. I hope that you heard in the first segment that we're taking your calls at 888-201-2244 right here at the War Room. And Jake, I'm going to let you go to the call board and see what we have.
Again, all right. Well, first of all, Roger, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
And it looks like we're going to go first to John from Arkansas. John, you have a question for Roger about Rod Rosenstein. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you fine.
Hey, Roger. Good to talk to you. I was just wondering why he can't sign a new succession order other than the one that Rosenstein had him sign. Why can't he just sign a new one to change it up?
Well, of course he can, and I'm glad you followed our previous reporting on this. The first White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, a man who did everything humanly possible to prevent Donald Trump from being nominated or elected, then became the White House chief of staff. And he and Rod Rosenstein put a document in front of the president changing the line of succession in the event that the attorney general resigned or was removed. The authority then flows to Mr. Rosenstein, but then instead of flowing to the Solicitor General, which has been the tradition under all previous presidents, it flows to a succession of deep staters who are actually U.S. attorneys in the states, not even based in Washington, D.C. This shows, I think, conclusively that Mr. Rosenstein, prior to the appointment of Mr. Mueller, was planning this takedown of the president from the beginning. More importantly, though, in the action plan we outlined in the Alex Jones Show on Monday, the president should order the Justice Department to declassify all of the data regarding the unconstitutional and illegal use of FISA warrants. What was the justification for those warrants? What was the probable cause? I think the American people would learn that there was none other than raw politics. And that, of course, means that the Obama Justice Department and the Obama FBI used the power and the authority and the extraordinary capability of the state to spy on the Republican candidate for president and his campaign. It's a terrific question, John. The short answer is the president can issue an executive order changing the line of succession at the Justice Department. Of course, there will be a firestorm if he does so. But there was no firestorm when Mr. Rosenstein and Mr. Priebus put this sneaky maneuver in front of the president, telling him it was merely a housekeeping document. Thank you so much for your call. With 33 seconds left, I want to say a word about the Infowars.com store, because, folks, this is our lifeblood. This is what keeps Infowars floating, moving forward, expanding, and fighting. Without your loyal support at the Infowars.com store, we literally cannot survive. Now we are challenged as never before. So please take a minute, go to the Infowars.com store, look at our terrific products, pick the one that you like, and make your purchase. God will bless you for it.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Warning.
This broadcast is not
for the weak-minded.
It's the War Room
with Owen Schroyer
and Roger Stone. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back. You're at the right place. That's right. It's the War Room with your co-hosts today, Jake Lloyd and Roger Stone. Jake, by the way, that's a great-looking necktie you've got there. I really think that you are really improving your game. Looking good.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm living through a virtual tsunami of fake news. As I said here on the Alex Jones Show earlier in the week, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and more recently, The New Yorker have all approached me about a fake news story from an anonymous source who told them that on October 1st, they overheard a phone conversation between me and candidate Donald Trump, in which I told him what would be included in the WikiLeaks disclosures regarding Hillary Clinton. So allegedly, the presidential candidate put this call on a speakerphone. This is 100% categorically fake news. You cannot tell somebody something that you don't know. There is no evidence to the contrary. There is no witness to this alleged phone call. And therefore, I made an immediate video, put it up on the at InfoWars, and released it to CNN. And to their credit, they posted it, although not in its entirety. Now I have a phone call from another reporter, Ryan Lizza, who alleges that there exists a tape between Michael Cohn and myself in 2016, also allegedly in October, in which we discussed the same subject. The problem with that, of course, is that I haven't spoken to Michael Cohn, I don't think it once in 2016, and most certainly not on the telephone regarding something that I had no knowledge of. Yet another example of this tsunami of fake news in which rumors and anonymous reports that are uncorroborated with more than one source become the law of the day, the rule of the day. This has replaced solid reporting. Normally speaking, a working journalist cannot write or report something that they don't have two solid, verifiable sources on. That doesn't seem to be the case for either one of these extraordinary fake news stories. So you're on notice. If you hear this fake narrative, you know now that it is a steaming pile of BS. Let's go back to the phones here at the War Room. That number, if you didn't get it earlier, 888-201-2244. Jake, you're the man with the plan. Let's go to the phone lines.
All right, it looks up like Chris from Kentucky is up next. Chris, you're on with Roger Stone on the War Room.
Hey, first-time caller. I've been trying to call forever. I love what you guys do. I honestly started listening to you just because the whole reason they banned you. And I'm like, because I used to hear about you, you know, whatever. He's a conspiracy theorist. But then when they banned you, I listened to you hardcore. You know, I tell people about it. I wear your gear. Right now I got the Malone Lab hat on right now, and I see someone with, like American stuff on. I'll start talking to them, then I'll tell them about InfoWars. And it's just, that's what I do. It's like I talk to people, I spread the word, and I just think it's great. Like, I'm ordering the, Supermail Vitality. I got that coming in the mail. I got a bunch of stuff coming in the mail. It's like all your products, I think, it just help defend the First Amendment. And more importantly, since we got to do this peacefully, because I think, you know, with all the Chinese, you know, Chi-Cons, whatever you want to call them, are trying to make this country get into some sort of civil war and then take that island off the coast of Taiwan while we're distracted fighting ourselves. And it's just so important to do this peacefully. And you got to spread the word. You know?
Absolutely. So us getting banned off of all of these platforms actually caused you to take a second look at InfoWars and then begin listening to us. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's the only reason. I used to just be like, yeah, I know some things, but I was just listening to regular talk shows, you know, like Savage and things like that. But then when they did it, I just started listening to you guys. When I got my hat and my Ideas Are Bulletproof t-shirt, you know, I took pictures of it and posted it on my Twitter. I said, hey, you know, I do hashtag free InfoWars, all that stuff. Like, I will promote you guys until they give us our country back.
Absolutely. I mean, I really think that this backfired on them. Thank you, Chris, for your call. I really think that by banning us, it seriously backfired on them by putting more eyes on our stuff and actually making people think, what are they actually getting banned for? I'm going to go listen to what they have to say. I mean, what do you think, Roger? How do you think that this has affected the mainstream media and these globalist establishments in the long term?
Well, first of all, we have a record number of people going to the InfoWars.com site, watching our live broadcasts in real time, a record number of people signing up for our podcast, a record number of people subscribing to the InfoWars official app in the Apple store until they started to hide where you subscribe to that, a record number of people listening to Alex Jones on terrestrial radio in the many markets where his show airs. So it has backfired badly. I can't even begin to tell you how many people have approached me when they see me out in public saying, you know, I really didn't pay much attention to what you and Alex Jones were doing until I heard that they were trying to ban him. Now that they're trying to ban him, I decided to tune in and hear what he had to say. And I must tell you, I really like what you guys are doing. Keep fighting. Keep telling the truth. So, Chris, I thank you for your call. You, I think, put your finger on a key tactic. It is vitally important that you take the links of the things that you find compelling here at InfoWars and you post them to your own social media, on your own Facebook page, on your own Twitter feed. Go to the list of all of your email contacts in whatever email server or email interface you use and send them those compelling links to spread the word. They may, in the end, succeed in silencing Alex Jones and Roger Stone and the Patriots here at InfoWars, although I wouldn't bet on it, but they cannot silence all of us. So sign up for the podcasts, watch the broadcasts here live, but more importantly, spread the links far and wide. Spread the word. Be a modern-day Paul Revere. We need your help as never before. Chris, thank you for your patriotism and for your call. Let's go back to the call board.
All right, next up on the list is Julie from Michigan, wanting to talk about conservatives and how they're represented in the pool in the polls. Julie, you're on with Roger Stone on the War Room.
Hi, Roger. Hi, Jake.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Nice to be with you. Well, I noticed when I was trying to fill out some polls that President Trump had sent to my email about the job that he's doing and how I feel about that and the media. When it came down to counting my results, I was supposed to put in a valid email address. So I put in my Yahoo.com address. They said it was invalid. I then put in my Gmail address. They said that was invalid. And I said, this is really weird. So I went to mail.com, got a whole new email set up, and it went through that time. So basically, that's another way that they're censoring conservatives and trying to keep the people that support the president from showing how they feel.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Roger.
You raise a very, very good point. I find, for example, if I take the link at Amazon to purchase my new book, Stone's Rules, and I try to post it on Facebook, it is disallowed for inappropriate content. How can that be? So the poll that you answered, which most likely came from the Republican National Committee, obviously has a bug somewhere in the software that is preventing them from communicating with you. And that is something they should look into. But the manipulation, the shadow banning, the various other computer tricks that are being used are obvious. And for Google, Facebook, Twitter et al. To deny the conservatives are being censored is laughable. It's provably false. Hopefully we won't have to prove it in a court of law, but that remains a possibility. Sadly, I don't think their vulnerability is on First Amendment issues. I think their vulnerability is on antitrust issues and these monopolistic practices that they are using to limit our ability to communicate with each other. You're on the War Room, Jake Lloyd, Roger Stone in the co-pilot seat, and we'll be.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back to the War Room, your hosts for the rest of this hour, this final segment, Jake Lloyd and Roger Stone. We've been covering a couple different things happening in Washington as well as taking your calls. Again, if you want to call in for this final segment, the number is 888-201-2244. Again, that is 888-201-2244. And before we go back to the phone lines, hearing some of these answers that Roger has given the guests, as well as what we were talking about in the first half of this hour, it shows how important it is to have somebody on your team in this organization that is familiar with the system, but is not friendly to the system. And that is Roger Stone. And as you've heard in a lot of these different things, we talk about it briefly, but even more so in the news, you'll see other stories about Roger Stone. It's very, very important that as you support InfoWars.com, that you're also supporting Roger Stone in his fight against these people trying to take him down. And you can do that at StoneLegalDefense.com. And that is one of the ways, or StoneDefenseFund.com, StoneDefenseFund.com. That is how you can support Roger Stone in his legal fight against these people who are trying to take him down merely for being associated with the president and loving this country.
Thank you very much for that, Jake. That's absolutely accurate. Having come up with no evidence of Russian collusion or WikiLeaks collaboration or any advanced knowledge of the acquisition and release of John Podesta's extraordinarily embarrassing and devastating emails, they now seek to conjure up some other extraneous offense on my part. It's a witch hunt, a modern-day inquisition, but it threatens to destroy me and my family. I was already facing literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills to fight against two phony lawsuits against me, one by the Democratic National Committee, one by a group controlled by Barack Obama. And this is their goal, to destroy you financially so you don't have the resources to fight back and to smear your name in the media. So for any InfoWarriors or any patriot who wants to help, go to StoneDefenseFund.com, StoneDefenseFund.com. Mrs. Stone and my entire family will join me in our our heartfelt thanks for your support. I am not Michael Cohen. I will not be pressured into testifying against Donald Trump. I will not be silenced in my criticism of the Mueller probe. But in order to continue this vital fight, I need to know that you have my back. Thank you for bringing that up, Jake. I really appreciate it. Let's go back to the phone board, if we may, the InfoWars War Room hotline, as it were. Let's take a few more calls in the time we have left.
All righty, let's go to James in North Carolina, who wants to talk about the censorship on Twitter. James, you're live on the War Room.
Hey, Roger, you're my hero. I just wanted to cover two topics right quick. The first is a specific censorship method that Twitter's employed, and I just want you guys to shine some light on it. They remove retweets about 12 hours after you retweet any conservative now, and they'll remove it after 12 hours. So it's a method to restrict access to information and limit the reach of it. So that's pretty bad. They're doing that to all conservatives now, as well as removing likes, too. So, and the second thing is, you guys think Soros' voting machines had anything to do with Gillum winning in Florida? Because he was in last place in the polls, and all of a sudden he wins. He's a socialist, wants to get rid of ICE. He's a Soros puppet. You think that had anything to do with it, Roger?
That's an excellent question. Let me take that one first. Actually, I predicted Gillum's victory some 10 days before the primary in a discussion with a reporter here in Florida. The reason I did so was because I believe, A, he is a charismatic and dynamic candidate. Secondarily, I think his voters were being underpolled. And the other important thing to remember is that primary polling, whether it's the Republican or the Democratic primary, is notoriously volatile and unpredictable because you really can't determine, unlike a general election, exactly who is going to turn out. I would point out to you that if you combined the votes of two of the other leading candidates, candidates who spent millions, Philip Levine of Miami Beach and Jeff Green, a Florida billionaire, if you combined their votes, they still would not have beaten Mr. Gillum. Those who are counting on Gillum's indictment in a corruption scandal, I think, are counting their chickens. This will be a very close and hard-fought race. Ron DeSantis, the congressman who won the Republican nomination, won it by a wide margin. Rick Scott, who is the governor, now leading narrowly in the U.S. Senate race. I expect this to be nip and tuck on both those races, right down to the wire. But no, I don't think there was manipulation of Gillum. I think Gillum tapped into a growingly socialist and progressive trend within the Democratic Party. Gwen Graham, the congresswoman from North Florida, who is the daughter of the legendary U.S. Senator Bob Graham, who has had the courage to question the entire 9/11 narrative was favored to win. She came up short. And I must say, the Gillum juggernaut did not surprise me, but I do not think it was attributable to skullduggery. I think it was attributable to a superb campaign funded by George Soros and funded by Tom Steyer, that came in under the radar. Watch this race very closely, folks, because Florida is a pivotal state in terms of President Trump's reelection. A state, I might add, that Mitt Romney and John McCain both lost, but that Donald Trump won. I remember sitting in the InfoWars studio in Austin as we were watching the early returns from Florida, and I noted to Alex Jones that watching the returns in three counties, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, that the margins by which Hillary Clinton was winning in those three big urban counties appeared to me early on to be insurmountable. I did not see the massive uptick in rural voting and in the voting in the I-4 corridor, not to mention North Florida, offsetting those big wins in South Florida and tipping the state to Donald Trump, again, achieving something that neither Mitt Romney nor John McCain could achieve. An excellent question. As far as your net censorship question, it's extraordinary the abuse and vituperation that Alex Jones and I have to settle for on the internet. We are regularly see calls for the murder of our families, the murder of our children, even the murder of my dogs. We know that Keith Olbermann can go online and on Twitter call for the violent assassination of Donald Trump, and he is not only verified but still there. Yet when I went on Twitter and I hurt Jake Tapper's feelings, well, I was banned for life. I now recognize that over a year ago when I was banned on Twitter, that I was merely a leading indicator. I was a test case, just as Alex Jones and InfoWars are a test case today. If they succeed in banning InfoWars, who's next? Will it be Sean Hannity, Mike Savage, Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, so many of these patriots that I admire? Trust me, if they get Alex Jones and InfoWars, they are next on the deep state hit list. An excellent question, and I thank you for it. Jake, I'm going to let you wrap this up with about a minute and a half to go. But once again, thank you, folks, for going to StoneDefenseFund.com. StoneDefenseFund.com. Yes, I am fighting for my life. Yes, I need your help, and God will bless you for it.
Absolutely. And James raised a very, very interesting point. The way that these social media companies censor people is very discreet. Only with big names like Roger Stone and Milo Yiannopoulos and Alex Jones do they outright kick you off. But for everybody else, they want you to think that you're still allowed on the platform, you're still fine, everything's good. But in reality, they use things like quality filters. It's called a quality filter that they use to censor you and keep you from interacting with each other, keep you from engaging with these bigger names. And what they do is they try to say that your posts are low quality, like you're a bot, a Russian bot even. And then they use that as a reason to filter you out, erase your tweets, and even sometimes totally suspend your account. So that's a very, very thing, very, very good thing to bring up. And this has been an excellent hour of calls and everything. My name is Jake Lloyd. My co-host, Roger Stone. We've been taking your calls. This is The War Room. Please support us at InfoWarsStore.com. Support Roger at StoneDefenseFund.com. We'll be right back on the other side with more War Room.
War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Trigger warning.
This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room. I'm your host for the rest of this hour, Jake Lloyd. Today is August 30th, 2018. And we just got done with a great hour with Roger Stone, taking your calls, answering your concerns and your questions about the current state of politics in the United States of America and abroad. And on my mind today, a lot of the stories I've had in the first hour, I talked about globalism a lot, about Emmanuel Macron and Salvini out of Italy and their clash of globalism and nationalism, pro-EU, anti-EU. And we talk a lot about globalism and nationalism, what we're fighting for and against. But I don't think that we really process it quite in the way that we need to all the time. And partially the reason that we don't do that is because of how discouraging it can be. It can be incredibly discouraging to focus on this type of stuff. But picture it 50 years down the road, okay? You wake up. You're in your apartment that's 150 square feet. It's tiny. You've got just enough room for a bed and maybe a little place where you can make food. You don't actually get to make your food because it all comes in prepackaged little things you just stick in the microwave. The government does that for you. Don't worry. And you wake up and you go over and you get your kids ready for school with their gender-neutral clothing and their gender-neutral names. They're only 6 years old yet, so they don't know what gender they are, okay? And then you take them to school, and you know in your government-approved vehicle, you take them to school, and you drop them off to the teacher there, who informs you that today is Drag Queen Awareness Day, and the kids are going to be getting lap dances from drag queens to educate them on LGBT causes. And, you know, there's, you know, classes, maybe they want to sign up for extracurricular activities where they learn how to be drag queens. And then you go back home and you make your food. I heard somebody talking the other day about how there's bugs. They're trying to popularize how good it is to eat bugs. And this person was saying that they're preparing you in your mind so that whenever there's a food shortage, which will be coming because of the booming population in Africa and Asia and South America, not in Europe and America, by the way, because they're suppressing those birth rates, but there won't be enough food for everybody. So you're going to get to eat bugs, but it's good. It's awesome. It's progressive because you've been told that eating bugs is good. It's trendy. And everything is a corporation. Everywhere that you look, it's a corporation. Nobody owns anything of their own. Everything that you have is either from the state or it's leased to you by a corporation. But that distinction doesn't really matter because the government and the corporations are the same thing. And we talk about 1984 all the time, but 1984 is reality. We are living in that to an extent, and we're only getting closer and closer to that as a fully actualized reality. I have a story right here. A campus bans September 11th memorial for bias against Muslims. Okay? Muslims are offended by us memorializing 9/11 and the people that died there, talking about, you know, radical Islamic terror. And so we're not going to talk about it because of the bias against Muslims. Harrison Smith will be coming on the show with me a little bit later, showed me a story from, I believe, a year or two ago, where there was a party and there was a song being played joking about bin Laden. Okay, and a female officer responded. I think it was just a noise complaint. She responded to this noise complaint, and they're playing a song that is offensive to Muslims, I guess, because it talks about bin Laden. And so then she hits the panic button. Police helicopters fly over. The thing gets raided and shut down. This is the memory hole because, you know, almost 20 years ago, they were the ones telling you that Osama bin Laden is the enemy. The Muslims in the Middle East are the enemy. Iraq is the enemy. But now they want you to forget that. They want you to forget that they told you that that is the enemy. And now they're saying, hey, whoa, take it easy. Muslims are our friend, right? They are the ones controlling the narrative. We've always been at war with Eurasia. We've always been at war with East Asia. We've always been at war with Islam. Now we love Islam. And they have created this problem for themselves because people are realizing you are the ones that first told me this is something I should be afraid. And now you're telling me to invite it into my country? No way. No way.
National National Enquirer reportedly kept Trump hush money info in a safe. And now they've been given immunity to begin to roll on the president. Meanwhile, Dan Rather, what Mueller knows will make Cohen Manafort pale by comparison. What, like your fake George W. Bush Air National Guard records, or maybe Brian Williams saying he got shot down a helicopter?
Always keeping in mind that Mueller knows so much more than he has shown. That if you think yesterday was a shock to our democratic system, just stay tuned.
Real clear politics there. Trump Organization could face criminal charges from Manhattan DA. Yes. Yes, the cesspool of corruption, New York. And now they're trying to tie that in to local government and go after the president himself. And why does the president have immunity? Except from impeachment. That's the other branch of government. He has that because any little two-bit jurisdiction would then start engaging in witch hunt prosecutions against the political enemy. You have dead to rights, the Clintons, Obama, Brennan, Clapper, lying to Congress. You have Benghazi. You have the looting of Haiti. You have the illegal servers. You have the $4 billion in the Clinton Foundation, Uranium One.
You know, Mueller is treating all Trump associates as if they're the mafia. And he's very selective about that. And I just wish that he would treat us Trump associates the way he treated Whitey Bulger's associates when he worked in Boston, because he let them get away with murder, literally and figuratively.
Roger Stone's sources, very close to the Mueller probe, because he's being probed himself, said there's no doubt Donald Trump Jr. is going to be indicted for misleading the FBI. Not for any legal meeting with the Russians. None of that is the case. But for them saying, oh, they think his Senate testimony is a little different than what he told the FBI. So it's all just interpretation. The FBI says, buddy, you said baby blue. We say sky blue. You're going to the hooskow.
Now, this past week, right here on InfoWars, I reported correctly that Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is now eyeing an indictment against Donald Trump Jr. for a process crime, most likely lying to the FBI regarding the Trump Tower meeting. Now, the same source, a solid source that brings me this information, tells me that contained in the Michael Cohen indictment is a reference to a second Trump Organization executive who approved the reimbursements to Cohen for monies he allegedly paid to Stormy Daniels, a transaction, by the way, that I argue is entirely legal. My source says that the only people at the Trump Organization since Donald Trump left to become president and Ivanka Trump left to become an executive in the Trump White House who have the authority to approve financial distributions or disbursements are Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, both strong patriots, both good men, both deeply devoted not only to their father, but to the president's reform agenda. And therefore, I believe, based on this source, that Mr. Mueller is eyeing some kind of indictment against the president's son. If that doesn't wake the president up, I don't know what will.
Welcome back to the War Room. I've been teasing at this new project that we're going to be launching now. It's going to be called University Wars. You've heard Owen Schroyer talking about it a little bit. You've heard him mention the InfoWars Army. But we're also going to be launching University Wars. It's kind of like the, you know, there's the Army, and then there was, they don't have any more, but back in World War II, there was the Army Air Force in the Army. This is going to kind of be the little inside organization. InfoWars Army is going to be a system, lots of audience engagement where we come up with an idea here and we tell you guys and you go do it. Obviously all legal and lawful stuff, but you know, whether it's go out, hold a banner or go out, canvas your neighborhood with signs that say this, you know, end the censorship, stop the bias, whatever that may be. University Wars is going to be focused on college students and people that work within universities, primarily our audience there. And our plan is to, we're going to have a website set up. We're getting social media set up right now. It's going to be great. We have universitywars.com. It's not live yet, so you don't need to go there yet, but we will have that soon. Owen Schroyer is going to do a hard launch for it on Tuesday of next week. But for the time being, I'm just kind of giving an idea right here. But the other thing that we want to do is we're going to find students within these campuses throughout the country, and we're going to set up kind of a collaboration with them where, you know, we work with them and they do reports either about something that their professors have said, whether their professors are just pushing Marxism or liberalism or discriminating against conservatives or libertarians, or maybe it's the activism that they're doing, producing videos of that. And then we're going to be basically syndicating those reports here on our InfoWars programs. And I told you about a guest that we had. This is our first guest. This is going to be kind of the inaugural partnership that we're going to have on the campus of UT. And we already have some big plans that we're going to try to make happen. I haven't even talked. This is Andrew Berman, by the way. He goes to UT. He's in the he's a film major. And we already have some good ideas, but he just rolled into the studio while I was with Roger, and then we're rolling right into this. So we're going to get to talking about that a little bit, and you'll see some very, very big things happening in the next few weeks and months. So, Andrew, thank you for coming on the show, first of all.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I want you to tell the audience a little bit, just set it up for us. What is it like? You're a libertarian. You're in the film. You're a film major, correct?
Correct.
What is it like in that particular part of the university as a libertarian? Are you able to just freely express your views?
Not at all. It's rough because the way UT does it, it's split between media studies and actual production. Mm-hmm. And I don't know which one's worse, because in the production realm, some of the professors have actually come and like protested your rallies and like anything you guys have done. They're like, you know, the whack job people that haven't really been able to like they're like too crazy for the industry rather. And the media studies professors, everything in like media studies within film and university is based through this like horribly Marxist lens. Like you start with Horkheimer and Adorno and everything's about aggression. Like,
Horkheimer, really?
That's your first textbook when you get film studies. And like the second I started, I was like, oh, this is, yeah, not like camera operation, not screenwriting. It's Horkheimer and Adorno and, you know, Marxism and cultivation theory and how negatively Hollywood is and stuff like that. So, So the second I started, I was like, oh, this is, and it isn't even just libertarian. It's just anything that isn't that Marxist.
Yeah. And just for the audience that might not know, Horkheimer is like one of the foremost thinkers in, you hear a lot about cultural Marxism. There's, you know, actual Marxism with Karl Marx and everything. Horkheimer is like one of the foremost, one of the biggest voices in the actual cultural Marxism that followed after the Frankfurt School and everything. So sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Go ahead with that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's exactly right. And essentially, because it would make sense, right, to learn about the impacts in media studies and the history of your major. That's why you go to school. But it doesn't make sense that before you even get to physically touch the camera, you're forced to take at least like six classes that are just Marxism. And, you know, and by the time you physically get your hands on a camera, you don't want to make anything, you know, creative. Mm-hmm. And you really notice it at UT that there's a huge splinter of kids that just immediately want to start making their own content because they get so jaded with, and even people who don't recognize like what they're learning is bad because it's like Marxism, they still feel like everyone is whispering in the classrooms like, why are we learning this? So why aren't we learning about like, you know, Hollywood history?
What does Horkheimer have to do with film?
There's so many, like, again, so that's like the dirty secret I don't think anyone's like really talked about is every single piece of film history, that's why like critics are so bad, mm-hmm. is based around Marxist theory. So like everything you do, like that's why they say, oh, this movie's bad for children, this movie's bad for this representation.
So critical theory has infiltrated the film industry.
100%.
Completely.
Yeah, there's no film theory that isn't based on critical theory. So,
wow.
And there's like 100 classes at UT for film and every single one of them is through this lens.
Wow, that's stunning. I mean, I've always known how that like it's very, very bad in universities, that Marxism is pushed very hard, that anything that doesn't toe the Marxist line has been is pushed out and discriminated against and silenced. I knew that, but I didn't know that it was that even just film production was totally based around Marxist critical theory. Okay, well, anyways, on the other side of this break that's about to happen right now, I want to get into kind of what brought you to this point where you started your own website and you're actually fighting against this in your own way. So we're going to get back to that on the other side. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Jake Lloyd, with Andrew Berman.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room, where almost halfway into our third hour of today's edition. I'm your host, Jake Lloyd, joined by Ethan Berman. I got his name wrong in the first one. Ethan Berman of BermanSplaining.com. And he's a UT student. He's a film major. And we were talking about how even when you go into a profession like film, immediately what you're hit with is cultural Marxism, indoctrination. And I mean, I didn't even know, like, I've always known that universities are bad. I did not know to what extent that was actually happening, that the fact that you are in film, you are immediately taught critical theory. So we got into that a little bit. And what I wanted to get into at the beginning of this part of the segment is what pushed you, like, does this website predate your time at UT, or did you start it up as a way to kind of start blogging and get stuff out there? What's kind of your path in that regard?
It was definitely the Trump's election. It was 2016. The major thing was going into university, because I'm from Las Vegas, so it's not like perfect there, you know, but I also had a military family. So yeah. I grew up, you know, knowing a lot of people, but getting university, I was expecting everyone to have like a variety of ideas, or at least respect, you know, debate. And I get here and every single person was saying the same things on public, and they're like repeating lines they were fed to, you know, by media or professors. And I was like, oh, this is really weird. And like, I was in class, you know, debating professors, or in class debating friends, people I thought were friends. And like, people were creating group chats just to like talk about, like, we have to talk to Ethan about, like, you know, not saying these things out loud. Like, he's making us look bad because of association. And I had friends getting like emails and stuff. And finally, it's like, you know, the typical story everyone has, like, in that time of like, you know, kind of having to go undercover. And finally, I was just so sick of it. Because everyone kept telling, like, hey, maybe keep your voice down. Maybe it's not good, you know. You know, I voted for Donald Trump, and that I like publicly talked about it, and I was like sharing like Pepe memes and stuff when it happened, and everyone was emailing like, I can't believe you voted for such a disgusting person. I can't believe, you know, I thought you were a good person, whatever. And I was like, you know what? Like, I tried going in, like, I realized how A, important it was, and then B, like, I don't want to be silenced. I don't like that feeling. Like, I'm supposed to be a content creator. I'm trying to major in like artistically expressing myself, and everyone that's supposed to be like around me is telling me like, no, keep your voice down. Like, I'm like, well, this is like part of my identity now, because everyone around me is like,
yeah, they almost force you to do it. It's like, a lot of times, you know, like personally, I just say something and it's just kind of a thought for me, but then people push me on it. It's like, no, I have to dig my feet in here. And it's like, this is what I believe to be true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to lie. That's my biggest thing. I don't like lying, whether it's in public or in the classroom or whatever. So the website was definitely a great way to express that. And it was hilarious, because the second I make it, I'm starting making articles, and I'm slowly building up like a viewer base and a readership. I'm getting all these emails, or, you know, private messages from people around campus, whether I know or not, going like, hey, thanks for posting this. I agree. Like, the Paris Climate Accords were dumb, you know, stuff like that. Everyone has, whether it's like they agree with the entire thing, or they'll even like, I'll defend you guys when you guys got banned, or I'll defend like Owen Benjamin when he got kicked off of social media, and I'll defend him, and they'll go, hey, I don't agree with this, but I agree with this. Thanks for like defending that, because I feel like all I'm getting is one side. And it was weird, because I was able to build this like groundswell of support really from all these people, despite the fact that like when I first created the website, I felt so alienated from everyone.
Yeah. And did you, I mean, have you lost friends? I would assume you have since then.
Yeah. Like the initial group of people I knew at university, basically I'm kind of persona non grata with a lot of people in UT film. Like anyone that knows me, I'll join a project and then someone will be like, oh, you know, but, I'm useful enough on sets that people are kind of forced to work with me, you know, but, yeah, definitely it's hurt some, relationships.
And do people like, I mean, do they call you Nazi? Like, you actually get Nazi labels?
Yeah, I'm Jewish too. So that's why it's hilarious.
Because
people will throw a lot of things at me. I've been called Nazi. I've been called racist, been called, the biggest one though, because I'm Jewish, a lot of people are like, oh, you're internalizing oppression and stuff like that. And, or the worst one is when people just don't say anything to me. I can just tell they're physically upset. Yeah. And then I find out later, oh, they were like, the worst is people posting on social media, on Facebook, like, this person in my class defended Donald Trump, or this person defended like Ron Paul. And I'm like, that's, you know.
That's the problem, is that these people view Marxism as a science. And if something's a science, then it, you know, it can't be wrong. And you have to like figure out weird ways to make things fit into your version of reality. So it's like, oh, a Jewish person supports what I think is a Nazi, therefore he's internalizing oppression. Or, you know, Candace Owens is, you know, a conservative. She must be secretly hating black people because she's internalized that oppression. So anyways, that's just kind of the insanity of Marxism. What do you think is how do you think that we go forward and fight against this? Because, I mean, hearing what you've said about professors and stuff, the way that it is, I mean, how do we even battle this?
Right. So I was really optimistic when, you know, YouTube and everything, you know, being from the younger mm-hmm. generation, it was like, cool, it doesn't matter if, you know, I know for a fact, like, Netflix won't buy my series, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm, you know, it's run by like, the Obamas and the Obama staffs. But, like, it's fine because if I get support, I can create a Patreon, I can create whatever. And then it got a little scary when, like, you know, Lauren Southern and a bunch mm-hmm. of other people started getting kicked off. But I still think, like, I've seen a lot of content creators and supporters, they still find support. Like, people still are still hungry for this content. Box office sales, you know, that's the one good thing I study at UT is just trends and demographics and the way people mm-hmm. want it. People aren't liking movies the same way they are right now because they can tell. Like they want Star Wars for escapism, and instead what they're getting is just a huge slew of like social justice. Mm-hmm. And the second something comes out like John Wick that has nothing to do with it, you know, it kills. Everyone loves it, you know? Yeah. So I'm optimistic that way because journalism and whatever, whether the platform's killed or not, like you guys are proof of this, it finds a way and people are searching out the content, mm-hmm. you know? And
yeah, in hearing what you said, it makes a lot more sense. I was talking earlier about, let's see if I can find the article. I was talking earlier about this. Did you see First Man?
Oh, right. Movie? The Damien Chazelle movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And they omitted the part where Neil Armstrong plants the flag mm-hmm. on the moon because it supposedly it's an achievement that transcends countries and borders. And that makes a lot more sense now hearing what you've said about everything mm-hmm. being filtered through cultural Marxism.
Right. And it's obvious coming from Damien because it's like you've seen his other filmography and obviously he's like tortured, you know, and mm-hmm. subscribes to all those beliefs. And, and that's the problem is it's, you know, we know how the industry works. A producer gives you the, you know, the green flag, yeah. like good job. And now it isn't, oh, you're a talented director. You're a good writer. It's you parrot the right things. You did your time. Here's your time to make something for us, you know, and there's a million writers behind you that are going to change your script for you to like make sure wow. it fits that. So
what are some of the, I'm interested to hear now, what are some of the craziest things that you've either heard a professor say or an experience that you've had in class? What's one of the craziest stories?
Oh man. I can't even think of the craziest. I can just think of like the multitude of mm-hmm. weird, like starting a class off in a semester and the professor makes everyone close their eyes like we're in kindergarten and says, hey guys, we're gonna have to walk around in class today. So raise your hands. And if anyone's otherly abled, make sure you raise your hands so that way I don't aggress upon you, you know? And then immediately it's like, okay, cool. Everyone here is, you know, fine. Let's do it. And then it's like, all right, I'll be handing out a piece of paper. Everyone write your pronouns and what name you want to be given in class this semester. And that this is like an upper division uh-huh. class, you know? And it's like, it's that bad. Like it's really that bad. And I'm like, I'm looking around and I have like my one friend in the class and we're making eye contact the entire time trying to laugh. Cause it's like, I can't, these are like 40-year-old people with doctorate degrees. I'm supposed to say like professor, doctor. And it's like, we're retrograding, you know?
Has anybody ever like taken advantage of that? I've heard in like some classes they'll write things, you know, it's like, what are your pronouns? And then somebody will go like His Majesty or things like that.
There was one guy I know who did it and he basically got blacklisted so hard the professor like threatened to like kick him out of UT. Because like, wow. Yeah, and it's pretty, I don't want to say any names or anything, but yeah, I've seen that. That was pretty bad.
Wow, absolutely astounding. Well, this is Ethan Berman. He will be collaborating with us in this upcoming University Wars project. It's going to be huge, really. I think it's a great idea. University Wars and then the InfoWars Army. Definitely be looking forward to it. Lots of big stuff coming up. So thank you, Ethan, so much for joining us. You can find him at bermansplaining.com. We'll be right back on the other side of this break with more War Room.
Infowars.com/show. Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to The War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd, your host for the rest of this hour, and I'm now joined by Harrison Smith, and we're going to be talking about some, you know, I started out the show with a story about the lobsters, about PETA trying to erect a 5-foot-tall monument to the lobsters, which were tragically slain on a highway in Maine.
Our fallen heroes.
It's like a song. Anyways, yeah, our fallen heroes, those lobsters died for our freedoms. Anyway, so I started it out on a positive note about these poor, not a very sad note about these lobsters. And now we're going to end the show for the next 30 minutes on a very, very, infuriating note.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about, the history of the transgendered agenda. Now, I mean, it's weird that we say transgender now, because I remember like 5 years ago it was transsexual.
Right.
And now it's transgendered.
Well, that's a key difference is the difference between gender and mm-hmm. sex, which is, of course, was sort of invented by Simone de Beauvoir.
There we go. Combining two of the topics today, Osama bin Laden and lobsters. But this time it was not lobsters killing people. It was people killing lobsters. Anyways, continue on.
Well, let's start it this way. I'll tell a little story. The other day I was test driving a car, and the guy riding with me was sort of talking. I wasn't saying much, but he was doing a lot of talking. He was an elderly Hispanic guy, Vietnam veteran. And he's asking me all these questions. And he's sort of a little bit political. He's sort of giving me political advice. And I'm just sort of nodding and agreeing. And he's just saying things like, oh, man, you know, you can't trust the parties. Like, don't listen to the parties, man. You got to listen to just the individuals themselves. I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. You know, I agree with that and all this. And I can't quite get a handle on where he is politically, even though he's giving me this political advice. At one point, he asks, you know, he's like, we're talking about this car. He's like, yeah, it's a great place to put your gun. You have a gun, right? I'm like, yeah, of course I have a gun. So I'm like, all right, this guy's kind of this and that. Anyway, then eventually he says something, he kind of lets it slip. And he's like, yeah, but you know, Trump does nothing but lie. And this. And mm-hmm. I sort of go, okay, all right, that's the side he's on. I get it now. So he's talking and I kind of get that, all right, he's more on the left. But I just say, yeah, you know, the parties are bad. You know, you can't always go one side or the other. But these days, one side can't even tell the difference between boys and girls. And the guy was like, yeah, you're right. Oh, that sucks. Like, it's just, the point is, that's just this thing that I think even some of the most dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, liberals, they still get that it doesn't make any sense to not be able to tell the difference between boys and girls. Mm-hmm. It's so fundamental. It's so obvious. It's so anti-reality that I think it really turns a lot of people off. You know, people that would be Democrats, I think pointing this out and going, yeah, you know, maybe the Democrat platform has some good stuff that you might like, but at the same time, they can't tell the difference between boys and girls. So how much can you really trust them? So, you know, the craziness that's going on is insane, is, I think, kind of in a lot of ways terrifying that this is what's happening, that transgenderism is becoming so prevalent, is not a good thing. At the same time, the liberals are digging their own grave with it, because it's so obvious to anybody with a lick mm-hmm. of sense. But what we're talking about today is this story that just came out, and it's that Brown University has removed from its science journal a peer-reviewed scientific study which shows that rapid onset gender dysphoria in adolescents and young adults is likely a peer pressure or a social problem. So basically, scientific inquiry, a scientific study, has been removed from circulation due to political pressure, due to just in special interest groups pressuring the university to take this out of the magazine. I mean, there were like minor questions about maybe the way that the study was carried out, but it wasn't a double blind placebo study. It was you know, they'd phone people and ask them questions and get answers that way. Still a perfectly valid way to do a scientific study.
Right, right.
So that's not what they were really protesting. What they're really protesting is the fact that this scientific result is insulting to some people. It clashes with their ideology. Wow. So, I mean, this is from, this is from the statement from Brown University. As you may be aware, Brown late last week posted a news announcement regarding research on gender dysphoria published by a faculty member in the School of Public Health. In light of questions raised about research design and data collection related to the study on, quote, rapid onset gender dysphoria, the university determined that removing the article from news distribution is the most responsible course of action. And it says the School of Public Health has heard from the Brown community members expressing concerns that the conclusions of the study could be used to discredit efforts that to support transgender youth and invalidate the perspectives of members of the transgender community. I have to read that again. You really have to understand what this is saying. The School of Public Health has heard from the Brown community members, and those community members are expressing concerns that the conclusions of the study could be used to discredit efforts to support transgender youth and invalidate the perspectives of members of the transgender community. From the horse's mouth, they are saying we are getting rid of scientific truths on behalf of an ideology to avoid insulting an ideology. I mean, this is exactly the same reasoning. I mean, just substitute, you know, transgender youth with Catholic youth, and you have a perfectly good reason to not accept the solar-centric model of the universe. And that's very insulting to our Catholic community members, so we won't accept that science. I mean, that's what's happening, and that's why you have to realize that these beliefs, not only are they not scientifically backed up, they aren't formed from, you know, a scientific evidence, they fly in the face of science, and this ideology is so powerful and so ingrained in the people that believe it that they're willing to do away with the science in favor of their ideology.
So we're no longer, our experience is no longer being informed by the outward physical world, by what's empirical evidence. We are now instead informing science on the basis of our own experience up here.
Right. Yeah,
it's pure moral relativism, really.
It is. And its root is in communism. We'll go through and get to the roots of some of this maybe next segment. But the real big issue here is that the conclusions that were arrived at through this study are at odds with people's beliefs. So essentially what this study really came out to say is that gender dysphoria could and probably is an example of, they call it a peer contagion. It's just peer pressure. So it says that 21% of the parents, they basically interviewed parents and asked them questions about their transgender youths, their rapid onset gender dysphoria, which means that this gender dysphoria went from not being in part of the kid's life at all mm-hmm. to complete, I am now the opposite gender within anywhere from a week to 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old are these? Is it ranging ages?
I don't have that information in front of me. It must have been around the age of puberty. That's about when these okay. things typically happen. But it says that 21% of the parents reported that the child had one or more friends that had become transgender identified around the same time. 20% reported an increase in their child's social media use around the same time. And 45% reported both. So both social media use increasing and one of their friends becoming transgender. 50% of the rapid onset gender dysphoria sufferers subscribe to both of those. And they talk about the types of advice viewed online and how it can be wrong. It's just wrong advice and dangerous. So examples include the belief that nonspecific symptoms such as feeling uncomfortable in their own skins or feeling like they don't fit in, which could be part of normal puberty or associated with trauma, well, they're being told that it should be perceived as gender dysphoria. The belief that the only path to happiness is transition, and the belief that anyone who disagrees with the teen is transphobic and should be cut out of their life. So, I mean, these are incredibly dangerous, destructive ideas that are being spread by peer pressure.
Wow. You know, we almost need an outro like this just to make, you know, my head not explode.
Well, it'll get worse next segment.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for it. Okay, well, we're talking more about this on the other side. This is The War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd, joined by Harrison Smith, talking about the assault on your children, really.
We knew it was coming. The whole thing was formulaic.
Infowars.com/show.
Welcome back to the last segment of The War Room. My name is Jake Lloyd, joined by Harrison Smith. In the last segment, we got into kind of the basics of this study from Brown University, where they basically found from what they tested that a lot of the transgendered stuff that you see is a fad. It's a trend. It's peer pressure. It's not a natural conclusion that people arrive at unless they're told by the media or their friends or social media. And that's kind of what we got into. And they said that it's the most responsible thing that they could do is to not talk about it, because it would invalidate the experience of some of the members of the transgendered community. So Harrison Smith is going to get back to taking us through this craziness, and it gets worse.
It gets worse.
You were telling me in the break that it gets much worse.
It gets much worse. And
it's all pretty easy to understand once you get all of these sort of informational points to see the common line between them is, in fact, I know this is going to be surprising to you, communism. That's right. It all comes back to communism, and I'll explain why right now. So, right, we were talking about this study, and essentially this study suggests that the drive to transition expressed by these teens and young adults could be a harmful coping mechanism like drugs, alcohol, or cutting. So, you know, essentially these people, these children, they feel anxiety, they feel uncomfortable in their own skin, very normal things for children to think. Their way they are being taught to cope with it is to turn transgender, and obviously they're celebrated by all their peers, celebrated by the teachers, celebrated by the media. For anyone to think that this wouldn't happen is not using their brain. And you can see even from 2014 to 2015, referrals to Britain's gender identity service for children doubled. So it doubled in one year in Britain. And in fact, I have this story from February 5th of this year that says more U.S. teens identify as transgender. So this was a survey of 81,000 Minnesota teens. Now, you have to remember transgenderism. Well, let me start over. So we have this study that shows that transgenderism is very likely to be spread through peer groups, through peer pressure. That conclusion is at odds with the already pre-formulated beliefs of the transgender community. So they force the journal to retract that. So, I mean, they don't retract it. They still say it's true, but we're just not going to publish it. And we're not going to show anybody our results. So changing scientific results for 0.3% of the population, I think it is, that is considers themselves transgender. So less than one half of 1% of the population, to appease them, we have to get rid of science. I mean, that's ridiculous. But 0.3% is the number typically given. But in this study that shows there's more teens identify as transgender, it's not 0.3, it's 3. So that's 10 times. So that's 9th and 11th graders are 10 times more likely to be transgender than the average population. So to think that this prevalence of you know, lionizing and acting like being transgender is heroic is obviously going to have an effect, especially on young kids. And it's not an accident. It is far, far, far from an accident. There was a whistleblower who talked about the welcoming school program. And the idea is you're not a welcoming school if you talk about traditional families being a thing. Basically, the whole idea is to destroy the traditional family. And these public school teachers in Texas are having to take 6 hours of training in non-academic topics that are about how to make your school comfortable for deviant sexual lifestyles. Literally, the teachers were told to go into small groups and figure out ways to talk about homosexuality that put it in a positive light. So public school teachers are being trained to train children that homosexuality is good. That is a moral question. That is a religious question that the teachers have nothing, should have nothing to do with. They're told not to call boys boys or to call girls girls. They take kids in buses from the AISD elementary schools to go to Pride Week. Maybe not elementary, that might be middle schools, but there are AISD buses that bus kids to Pride Week. In fact, they have, I think they celebrate a Pride Week within the schools. I mean, so this isn't happening naturally. These are specific programs that are put into place that say, hey, if you want certain amount of funding, or if you want this, or if you want that, then you have to have your teachers go through this indoctrination so that you can pass it on to the kids. And the kids are told, the material that's given to the kids says, you know, what to do if you feel like you might be transgender. Well, in all of the suggestions that they give, talking to your parents is never suggested. They say, hey, if you feel this way, go talk to your principal, go talk to a nurse, go talk to a teacher. They don't say go talk to your parents. They want the schools making these decisions for the children before the children are old enough to make them for themselves. It's incredible. I mean, it's just incredible. There's also, I mean, there's similar programs that go into churches that tell churches to, you know, modify their message in order to attract LGBTQ people, which is, in my opinion, the opposite of what churches should do, and is why churches in America are failing, is because they refuse to uphold doctrines and want to try to go with the times, which is not what a church is for, people. But this is happening not just by accident, and also not just by indoctrination. It's happening with the force of law. So this is a story from February 20th of this year. Religious parents lose custody of their transgender teen for refusing hormone treatment. Okay, so a Hamilton County, Ohio judge took a transgender teen away from her parents on Friday because they refused to allow the 17-year-old to undergo hormone treatments as a part of female-to-male transition. And it said that the judge says that, it's unfortunate that this has to be resolved by the court, but the fact that the child truly may be gender nonconforming and has a legitimate right to pursue life with a different gender identity than the one assigned at birth is the reason that they can remove her from her parents. It's ridiculous. This is a minor. This is a minor being taken from her parents by the state because she wants
Does it
to
say what they did with the child.
Well, the child is now living with the grandparents because that was basically, it was like, well, we're either going to take her, or you can have them go with the grandparents. But the craziest thing is that the parents initially sought treatment for their daughter's anxiety and depression at a children's hospital where they were, quote, legitimately surprised and confused by the diagnosis of gender dysphoria, according to Friday's decision. She had lived as gender conforming until 2016. So you have a teenage girl who's taken to a hospital to be treated for anxiety and depression. Apparently, she learns there, maybe the doctor tells her, I don't know, but apparently while at this hospital, she discovers that she's actually transgender. The doctor tells her that. The parents say, we don't think that's true. The state comes in and takes the kid away and makes her go and lets her go do the hormone treatments. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. So, and of course, they are being charged with basically neglect and abuse is what
Wow.
This is being considered.
Wow.
So that was February 20th in America, in Ohio. That happened. This is from July 26th. This is just 1 month ago. Oregon judge rules in favor of transgender students in bathroom case. This one is shocking. I'm going to read stuff that I want you to go study for yourself because you're not going to believe what it says. So this judge says, once the parents have chosen to send their kids to school, their liberty interest in their children's education is severely limited. He says, basically, they're just saying that forcing transgender students to use facilities inconsistent with their gender identity would undoubtedly harm those students and prevent them from equally accessing educational opportunities and resource. That's nonsense. Going to the restroom in accordance with your gender does nothing to affect your educational ability to learn. But it says that basically it would be humiliating for them to have to go to the restroom that corresponds with their gender. And the judge says that sex is defined as a process led to denote male or female. Literally, this pseudoscience of gender is not sex is in our law now. He says a gender is a person's subjective deep core sense of self as being a particular gender. I mean, this is ridiculous communist talking points that are making laws in America. But here's the crazy one. The principal, according to the judge, informed them that all facilities may be used by any students regardless of biological sex. In this case, the judge says, he wasn't convinced that the students had a, quote, fundamental right to privacy cognizable under the 14th Amendment. The students, he said, have, quote, no fundamental privacy right to not share school restrooms, lockers, and showers with transgender students. For the school to force them to, quote, see or be seen by someone of the opposite biological sex while either undressing or performing bodily functions in a restroom, shower, or locker room does not give rise to constitutional violation. To be seen by someone of the opposite biological sex. For your daughter to be seen by a young man as she is getting naked, that's fine. She has no right to privacy in public schools.
This is what's happening, folks, and this is why it's so important that you fund